All right, we are live here with a Schloss rant from the Philadelphia suburbs. The site of the beatdown last night, which our New York Knicks defeated the Sixers by 36 points. So that was unbelievable. Let's start off with the New York Knicks, and then we'll get into all the football stories as it's now Saturday night. You know the playoff scenarios, we'll break it down. But I think it's important to start with the Knicks' absolute beatdown of the Philadelphia Sixers by 36 points last night. Now, if you were to say to me before this game started, the New York Knicks would have won by 36 points, I would have said one of two things. I would have said that Randall and Brunson combined for somewhere in the nature of 75 to 80 points. And I would have said they would have shot absolutely the lights out from three-point. One of those two things was true. The Knicks last night shot 44% from the three-point line and beyond, but Julius Randle had his absolute worst game of the year. He had 8 points in the game. He only made one field goal. He had 6 points at the free throw line. That was far worse than any of the games he had early in the year, whether you want to talk about that Milwaukee game early in the year where he pretty much got in Brunson's way. Far and away his worst game of the night. But again, the Knicks still win going away by 36 points. And this comes down, yet again, to OG Anunoby and the impact that he's been able to make since he has joined the Knicks. In his first three games as a New York Knick, his plus-minus ratio is positive 74. He is the first player in NBA history to be over a plus 70 in their team in the first three games they have played with their team. So it's not just the stats that's impressive with OG Anunoby. It's the fact that he's able to lock people down. And you even heard Tyrese Maxey talk about it in the post game. He said he did a pretty good job. It's the fact that even though you have Mitchell Robinson out, you played good defense, you contested the Philadelphia shots. And I'm pumped up, not just because I'm a Knicks fan living here right outside of Philadelphia. I'm pumped up because it seems like this Knicks team is not resting on its laurels after winning a playoff series last year. No, no. They are coming back. They're coming back stronger. They're not making excuses for Mitchell Robinson being out. And I think the biggest thing that you love with this Knicks team is it seems like they're making smart moves. If you think about how little compared to other NBA point guards Jalen Brunson's making, if you think about how little compared to other all-NBA players, albeit a third-teamer, Julius Randle is making. So they're making smart moves. And even though they traded away the homegrown guys, which, like I said, I was upset about. It was not something that I was happy about at all whatsoever. You look at Randle and Brunson kind of almost like, yeah, you didn't draft them, but they are guys that this front office has brought in and has helped make them into better players than where they were before they joined the Knicks. So you're definitely all pumped up about that. And I think with Randle, with Brunson, these are guys you're excited to root for. And I know that Randle sometimes takes the air out of the ball. He doesn't pass. He takes stupid shots sometimes. But take away his game from last night. This is a guy that's averaging over 25 points a game. This is a guy that if you take away the bad start to the year, he's at over 28 a game. All right, and there are going to be haters. There are going to be people that doubt this team. I understand they're not as good as Milwaukee. I understand they're not as good as Boston. I understand that if Maxey and Embiid really have it going, they're probably not even as good as this team that they beat last night. And that's fine, but I'm still allowed to be pumped up. And for some of these Sixer fans out there tweeting like Spike Eskin, you know who you are, that this is the third biggest Knicks moment other than insanity and winning a round in the playoffs last year. And of course, we're talking, you know, the last 20 years or so. You know, your Sixer team, you need to probably should watch your, you know, worry about your business with your Sixer team, because the Knicks made it as far as the Sixers did last year, and the Sixers had two MVP players on the team with Harden, the former MVP, who's of course not there anymore, and of course Embiid, who was the MVP last season. And the Knicks went just as far as they did in the playoffs. The Sixer fans got to watch their mouth. Your team has won basically nothing. You've been to a finals, yeah, more recently than the Knicks in 2001 with that Allen Iverson-led team, of course. But it's not like you've been so much better. You had a prolonged stretch of losing during the trusted process, period of time there. And the Knicks have been bad. There's no denying it. But a Sixer fan is not going to be the one to be talking and putting me down, especially after the Knicks laid the wood on them last night, after they dropped the hammer on them last night, after they smashed them with a 2x4, whatever reference you want to say. They came to play, and the Sixers did not. And one other guy I want to destroy here, Stephen A. Smith. This is a guy who referred to Isaiah Hartenstein, who was coming into the season, the Knicks' backup. He referred to him as some guy named Hartenstein, and he said he didn't even pronounce his name right. It's Hartenstein, Stephen A. Smith. Say his name right. Wednesday night, Hartenstein had 10 points and 20 boards and 5 blocks. All right. So he's balling out. Watch the games. Is that too much to ask? You go on ESPN, you talk about being this big time Knicks fan, watch the ball games. I'm pumped up about this Knicks team. Very pumped up. I understand they're not winning a title. All right. I've said this, we've been over it. We've harped on it. They're not winning a title. Are they making the Eastern Conference Finals? Probably not. But again, when you've suffered as much futility as that organization has suffered, to just at least be competitive, be making smart moves, not being the laughing stock of the league, you put yourself in a good position that with all your first-round picks that you have, that you're going to be able to get a player, get someone to take you over the top. And that does not mean Donovan Mitchell, because again, I'm not going to argue with anyone else about this. You put two little guards in your lineup, you suffer severely on the defensive end, and both guys need to dribble the air out of the basketball in order to be effective. So no, we're not doing that. Not trading the farm for Donovan Mitchell. Sorry, Cleveland, if you gave up too much. The Knicks are not going to be the one to bail you out. If he wants to come here as a free agent, I still hate the fit, but at least I still have assets and I can maybe reshuffle and move off of guys as needed. So, no, they don't need him. They really don't. All right, the National Football League. Earlier today, the Steelers win. We know where they sit. Going to be tricky for them to make the playoffs as they still need help. But help could be on the way if Jacksonville is able to lose. And we'll get into all the scenarios here in a second. I want to be the last guy, though, to comment on that Detroit Lion-Dallas Cowboy 2-point try. All right. So, again, I'm going to be the last one to chime in on this. I like the idea overall, Dan Campbell, Man Campbell, biting off kneecaps and going for it. I like that. I like the idea of running a trick play. It seems like it was definitely something that they practiced. The play itself was something they practiced. Everyone was in the right spot. They were organized. The problem is you confuse the refs to high heavens with all these guys running in. And little known fact is that these refs, they get confused quite easily. And I say that, in jest. It doesn't take much to confuse some of these refs. So when you have multiple tackles running in to report as eligible, and they're saying to the official, "Mr. Official, Mr. Official, I'm reporting for duty." Yeah, that's what you're supposed to say. All right. "Mr. Official, I'm reporting for duty." When you come out wearing an ineligible number, it's not "I'm checking in." It's not "I'm lining up on the end." It's "Mr. Official, I am reporting for duty." All right. And I understand they talk about the rub of the stomach. That's also another signal. But if you watch the play again, and you've probably seen it enough, there's not enough time for that ref to get organized. Did he mess up? Yes, but you can't expect them to not mess everything up. Because you're running in, you got multiple guys. Again, and I'm rambling here a little bit. So, bottom line, part of this accountability needs to be on the offensive lineman for running in and having guys who didn't need to report as eligible report as eligible. But part of it also is on the refs too, because the ref needs to be aware of everything. He needs to hear everything. If he's unsure of something, then he should really double check. He should have. I would have had no problem if the ref pushed some of these linemen who showed up to him out of the way and said, who's reporting for duty? Who's eligible? I would have had no problem if he did that. And Detroit shouldn't have sent all those guys going there. The biggest problem, though, that I have in this situation, it's not that these refs need to be full-time. What do you want them to do in the offseason when it's full-time? It's stupid. Biggest problem that I have is while these officials have to meet with a pool reporter, that's not good enough for me. They should have to line up the entire crew at a podium, at a press conference with a table, with the sponsor in the background, with a bottle of water, a bottle of Gatorade, and answer these questions from reporters. These games are important. We all care about these games. We love football. The refs, sometimes, not every game, but sometimes, and more often than we'd all like to admit, they become part of the story for the game. And it should be more than just one pool reporter asking questions. I want real big time reporters in there. I want Peter King's. Well, Peter King's not, covering games on a daily basis, but you get the idea. I want, Josina Anderson's. I want Kimberly A. Martin's. I want, pick your big time NFL reporter, Diane Rossini. I want them to ask the questions to the refs. I want them to be held accountable. Another person who I'd love to see in there, I'm not sure what she's doing nowadays, is Kimberly Jones, formerly with WFAN, and maybe she's still there. I haven't heard her in a while. She used to do the Yankees. She was on NFL Network. She's a reporter who's got, no issues asking questions. So get me someone like that asking questions to these refs because they become a part of the game a lot of the time. Are they a part of a game when it's 47-3? No. But are they the leading story of the game with the Detroit two-point play? Yes. So that's the biggest angle that I take out of this is that these refs need to answer questions from the press so we can know what's going on. Because it's easy to lie to one pool reporter who's probably on your side anyway, but it's not easy to lie to serious big-time journalists and TV announcers, whoever it might be, covering these games at a podium. All right. And again, these things aren't, bivariate. It's not only Dan Campbell's fault. It's not only the Lions' fault. It's not only the refs' fault. It's a little bit of everyone's fault. So again, these refs should be held accountable. All right. Now, let's look at another story I want to talk about here about the NFL. Then we'll talk about, the under-overs for the season. We'll give you an update on that. So, Justin Fields and the Bears. This is an interesting situation. If they win, they're at 8-9. They're not making the playoffs. We know that because Minnesota, even if they end up 8-9, they would get the spot. And Seattle's in the mix too. Maybe go 9-8. So they're eliminated from playoff contention. Fine. The question becomes, though, have you been impressed enough with Justin Fields? Have you been impressed enough with the head coach, Matt Eberflus, to run it back next year, try to build off of your late season momentum? And they've been very good, much better than most people expect. But for me, as a Giant fan, I think I have firsthand experience of it this year. With Justin Fields, the fact that you've had to think about whether or not he is good enough to be your franchise quarterback tells me all that I need to know. Fields is going to need an extension soon. And you are in deep doo-doo, for lack of a better term, if you are paying a quarterback who is good to okay, elite, top of the market money, a la Daniel Jones and the New York Giants. So I get rid of Fields. I'm okay knowing that I've increased the value of the asset in Justin Fields, that someone will take a shot on him. Someone will give me maybe a couple of first round picks, a first and a second, whatever the compensation you straighten out is. But I think there will definitely be a market for him, whether it be Tennessee, whether it be Atlanta. You know, there are definitely teams that can use a quarterback who they believe is good enough to start and win ball games for you. But again, the problem in the NFL, it's not paying the superstar quarterback loads of money. Patrick Mahomes won the Super Bowl last year. He's making a lot of money. Tom Brady with the Bucs a couple of years before that. That's not the issue. The issue is when you pay non-superstar quarterback money. That's when the problem arises. So I move off of him. And not only that, I keep that number one pick that you're going to get from Carolina. I get rid of Eberflus. I go in there. I get an offensive coach who's going to develop Caleb Williams. They know. They have an idea already. Whether or not they're telling you the Bears front office, they know whether or not they're going to keep Fields and whether or not they're going to draft a quarterback there. Because you can't draft a quarterback if Fields is there. Now, I would keep Fields only in this situation. It's not possible. But if this was Fields' first year and this is what he's showing me, okay, now we have something. Now we can get to a point where I pick up that fifth year option and I have four more total years of control at a reasonable price. Time has run out, unfortunately, for Justin Fields. So even if they go 8-9, they have a solid finish of the year, I'm moving off of them. All right, the next thing. The seeding in the NFL. Let's say the Browns win tomorrow. The Browns would have 12 wins. That would put them at only one less win than the number one seed Ravens. I think the NFL should reseed. I still think that division winners should make the postseason, but I think that in this case, I got no issue if you reseed and go by the best record. And if that means that you use a division winner as a tiebreak, so let's say the Browns couldn't be a number two seed because let's just make this up, the AFC South, Texans won it or something, they also had 12 wins. I'm okay if you do that, but I think that the Browns or any team that wins the second most games in the conference possibly think that they deserve to be a higher seed and not automatically have to go on the road for most of their games. All right, now let's get to what's on the table tomorrow in terms of my preseason under overs. So one that was already wrong. Minnesota over 8.5 in the beginning of the year. Go back and listen to the podcast. That's wrong. They can only win eight games. They can still make the playoffs. They can only win games, eight games. Seattle under 9.5. That is correct. I not only said Seattle not under 9.5, I also had them in the playoffs. Seattle's got a chance tomorrow to make the playoffs and get to exactly nine. So I got to give myself a tip of the cap. Giants under 7.5. That's already correct, as much as it pains me to say. Cowboys over 9.5. That is also already correct. Chiefs over 11.5. That is incorrect. And there is no way that they get to the 12 wins. Panthers under 7.5. That's correct. And the one we just touched on, the Bears under 7.5, is to be determined. So for the under overs for the season, we're either going 4-3 if the Bears win, or we are going 5-2 if the Bears lose, or if they tie, they would still stay at 7 wins. I don't think there's going to be a tie. So tomorrow, going forward, what's on the table with these games? One thing to note, and you've probably heard this multiple places, teams that are eliminated playing teams with a win and in scenario in the last 2 weeks or where they're playing for something are 164, 100 wins and 64 losses, and I think like four ties against the number. So something important to keep in mind as you kind of take a look at these games and handicap these games, that the teams that are playing for everything are not covering the number. You know, it's like over 60% going the other way. Another interesting note, what's on the table tomorrow? The Falcons, they are currently the number 12 seed in the NFC. They're actually behind the Bears, who are the number 11 seed. And you're saying, oh, there's only seven playoff teams. And I'm saying, I know. But the Falcons are currently the number 12 seed. They can move all the way up to the number four seed if Tampa Bay loses to Carolina. And if they beat the New Orleans Saints, they could climb eight seeds in one day. I haven't been able to find a way to research this, but that's an interesting little tidbit to see, you know, a team be able to jump eight spots. Additionally, if the Broncos win over the Raiders, the Bengals beat the Browns, You're going to have 11 teams in the AFC with at least 9 wins. I know there's 17 games now, but I'm also wondering if you had the last time you had 11 teams at 500 or better in the conference. And I know that it's easier to go over 500 because now you can only if you win 9, you can lose 8 to go along with that. So you're 1 game over 500. Where before, if you win 9 in a 16 game season, you have to go 9-7. So a little easier to finish with a winning record in theory. All right, the next thing. You got six teams playing with a win-and-in scenario. The Colts versus Texans going on right now. It's 14-0 when I started to record. Buccaneers playing at Carolina. Green Bay, who's playing with Chicago. Bills with Miami. And Jaguars are in the playoffs. And I believe they win the division. They win over the Titans. So let's take a look real quick at how some of these teams can get into the playoffs. And then I'm going to give you a prediction for what I think is going to happen. And then I'm going to give you the picks. So Tampa Bay, they are in with a win against Carolina. All right, there's a chance that they can also get the number 7 seed. If they tie against Carolina, the Seahawks lose to the Cardinals, and the Packers lose or tie against the Bears. With some of these ties, it gets real awkward and real weird. Saints is much simpler. They get a win and they get a loss by the Bucs to the Panthers, they're in. If they tie the Falcons and the Buccaneers, a tie against the Falcons, and if the Bucs lose to the Panthers. So yeah, they need the Bucs to lose to the Panthers. All right, Atlanta, like I said, excuse me. They are 7-9 right now. They're currently in the number 12, but they can climb up to number 4 because they can win the division. If the Falcons beat the Saints, if the Bucs lose to the Panthers, Atlanta finishes 8-9, not 11-9, 8-9, and they win the division because all three of those teams are 8-9. But the Falcons would have a 3-1 record in those common opponent games, meaning against Tampa Bay and New Orleans. Tampa Bay would be 2-2. New Orleans would be 1-3. The Packers get in if they tie with a Seattle loss or tie against Arizona, Saints loss or tie against Atlanta. Or they can just win the game and be in, or a tie against Chicago with a Seahawks loss to Arizona, a Buccaneers loss to Carolina. They can also back into the playoffs with a loss if Seattle loses to the Cardinals, the Bucs lose to the Panthers, and the Vikings lose to the Lions. These scenarios are kind of complicated. Seattle gets in if they beat the Cardinals or if the Packers lose or tie against the Bears. That's the basic one. There's a couple other ones involving a bunch of ties. The Vikings get in, and they've got a slim chance to make it. They're 7-9 right now. They can get to 8-9. If they beat the Lions, if the Seahawks lose, if the Packers lose, and the Bucs lose. So they need a lot to happen. Or one other scenario, they beat the Lions, the Seahawks lose to the Cardinals, the Packers lose to the Bears, and the Saints lose to the Falcons. So that would be definitely interesting. We know about seeding in the NFC that the Cowboys can lock up that number 2 seed with a win, or if they lose and the Eagles also lose, the Eagles can get that number 2 seed as well. They'd have to beat the Giants, and Dallas would have to lose. So to keep that pretty simple there. All right, now let's go over to the AFC. You know about the Dolphins and Bills playing that win and in scenario. Possibly building up for the Bills, where they could win the division or they could possibly be out. That was definitely aided in the fact that Pittsburgh won. And I believe it's also that if Jacksonville wins, they're going to need that game to be in. Miami is in no matter what. So Buffalo, though, they can get to that 6 seed, even if they lose. And that would put them at 10-7. So even if they lose to Miami, that would have required Pittsburgh losing and Jacksonville losing, but Pittsburgh didn't lose. So they might have a scenario where they're not getting in unless they win. So complicated there in the AFC. Now let's get to the picks. There's a lot going on. Let's get to the picks. A lot going on with these playoff scenarios shaping up as we speak. All right, let's get to the picks. Give me the Atlanta Falcons plus 3.5. So despite everything I just said there, this is not talking about who's winning, but this is just talking about point blank. I'm taking the Falcons, getting the 3.5 points. Get Atlanta back inside. They're a much better team. I don't like Dennis Allen and the quarterback Carr as favorites covering the number. I know we did this about a month ago or so with the Giants, or it was 3 weeks ago or so with the Giants and the Saints. You took the Giants. The Giants are just not very good when DeVito was in there. So, yeah, give me Atlanta getting the 3.5 points. The next one, Minnesota getting 3.5 also. 50% of the money is on them with only 33% of the tickets. So pretty straightforward there. That's a metric we've used all year. It's not foolproof, but it's definitely something I like to see. The next pick, Seattle, 2.5. This is a pure game of me just saying, listen, I'm buying low on Seattle after they lost. The Cardinals had their biggest win in recent memory. So I'm totally buying low. I think Pete Carroll gets his team ready to play, regardless of whether or not they're going to make the playoffs. So give me Seattle laying the 2.5 on the road. The next one, this is probably my favorite pick of the week. Titans plus 4.5. This leans into that trend of 164-4. The Titans have nothing to play for, where Jacksonville has absolutely everything to play for because they can win the division if they get in. So my last pick after that, and then I think we got to tidy up that AFC scenario, but my last pick is the Bills laying the 2.5. I understand this is as public as possible, but I think that the Bills know everything is right in front of them. Miami has no pass rush. I think that'll help Allen be able to throw the ball down the field. I think that'll help Allen keep things alive in the pocket, take off and run. If I was looking at other things, and I don't really give out props, I don't really give out, weird types of things like that. I don't do same game parlays. We pick these games against the number. But I would take a look at probably Josh Allen over his rushing yards because this is a big game. He needs to lay everything on the line. That would be a prop that I would give out. We're not counting it against the official record. So the picks, Atlanta getting the 3.5, Minnesota getting the 3.5, Seattle laying the 2.5, the Bills laying the 2.5, and the Titans getting the 4.5. And our record, of course, on the season thus far is, got to look for it here. Our record is 49, 32, and 4 on the season. So pretty good. We had a 3-2 week last week. We're going to try to look to finish up strong, try to get above 60%. It's not winning you the circuit competition, but there's not many people who are putting their picks with their names on them and going over 60%. And we've got a chance to do that if we go 3-2 or better. So 3-2, or obviously 4-1 or 5-0, or even 3-1-1 will get you there. I don't know if 2-2-1 will get us over 60%, but it'll be pretty close. So those are the games that I like. Now, I got to sort out this AFC playoff scenario because I think I confuse myself every which way here. So within the AFC, after that Pittsburgh game is over, let's take a look and try to find this AFC playoff scenario to try to make some sense out of this now that that Pittsburgh game has been played. So let's see if we can find something that makes sense here. All right, so let's see. We know about the Ravens. We know about the Dolphins. The Dolphins can be the second or the sixth seed, of course, if they win against the Bills. All right, now the Bills is the confusing thing. They could be sixth. They can be second or seventh. So because Pittsburgh won, they can't get to the sixth seed. They can also be out of the playoffs. If the Bills beat the Dolphins on Sunday, they win the AFC East easy enough. They lose, they still get in, but they need Jacksonville to lose to the Titans. All right, so pretty simple there. The Steelers can be sixth, they can be seventh, or they can be out of the playoffs. So the Steelers are in the seventh right now as they've finished up their season 10-7. But again, they're not a lock to make the postseason. So to make the playoffs as the seventh seed, they need either the Jags or the Bills to lose. They can get the sixth seed, but then they would need the Jaguars and the Bills both to lose. And they could be left out of the playoffs if the Bills and the Jags both win. So that makes a little more sense now. The Browns are locked into the five. Jaguars can now only finish fourth or out of the playoffs. If the Jaguars beat the Titans Sunday, they're in. So you've got two really big games there. The Jaguars and the Titans. Just the fact that Vrabel might be done, Derrick Henry might be done. Tennessee plays very well at home there, so that was another reason why we take the 4.5. They're 4-3 in the season straight up at home. So I don't hate a scenario where I take the 4.5 there. All right, so the playoff scenario, AFC makes a lot more sense here. The Steelers, basically, to make the playoffs, they need the Jaguars or the Bills to lose, and then they're in the seventh seed. If they both happen to lose, they're in the sixth seed. The Bills are in the second seed at 11-6. If they win, they win the division, and the Jacksonville Jaguars lose as well. But again, they're out of the playoffs if the Jags win. Just wild. So just wild. If they lose, they would have needed the Jaguars to lose. But the crazy thing, though, with the Bills, and I know I'm reading this now, is that all the games would have been done. So they'll know whether or not it's still on the table for them to make the playoffs. So, yeah, if the Jaguars happen to have lost to the Titans, they clinch a playoff spot, but they don't clinch the division unless they win. So just madness, absolute madness. I mean, if you look at the NFC, it's not quite as complicated. Maybe just seeding, it's a little more. The NFC actually might be more complicated because I take that back, because you still have alive the Seahawks, you still have alive the Saints, the Vikings, and the Falcons all in the mix. Where in the AFC, it's not quite as complicated because the only other teams that are still alive are the Colts and the Texans, and they're playing right now. And by the time you're probably watching this, you'll know who's in that playoff spot. So just madness, though, with that NFC South, because you're going to have a division in which the winner is going to be 9-8 at the best. And there's a chance, I think there's a chance, the Rams are at 9-7. No, so you might have actually with the Packers 8-8, you might have, I know I'm rambling a little bit here, but you might have two playoff teams at 8-9. You might have a Falcon team who wins the division. You might also have a Viking team that gets in as well at 8-9. Yeah, because the Saints can go lose the game to the Falcons. That means the Vikings can get in at 8-9 here. They need, like I said, the Seahawks and the Packers lose, plus either the Saints or the Bucs have to lose. So if that happens, where the Bucs lose, the Saints lose, putting the Falcons in, the Vikings could grab that number seven seed and be 8-9. And the Falcons, they can't make the wild card. So we're reading a little more. The Falcons cannot make the wild card. They can only be a division winner, which is kind of interesting. And they need some help, of course, to do that. All right. So we've been all over the place here. Schloss Rant, live from the Philadelphia suburbs. Let's go over the picks one more time before we end the podcast here. We got Atlanta plus the 3.5. So again, nothing to do with who's winning, but Atlanta plus the 3.5, Minnesota plus the 3.5, Seattle minus the 2.5, the Bills minus the 2.5, and the Titans plus the 4.5. All right, Schloss Rant live from the Philly suburbs. Crazy, hectic day tomorrow in the NFL. Crazy for me to understand the playoff scenarios. I hope you understand them just a little bit better than me. And the Knicks won tonight again. They are undefeated with OG Anunoby in there, so that's amazing. And Arizona cruises to a 19-point win over Utah. Things are looking up. If the hockey team that I root for, the New Jersey Devils, could just straighten things out. You want to talk about a team not living up to expectations. They were tied for the second best odds to win the Stanley Cup. And this is now a team sitting at 21-15. And how many losses? Two overtime losses. So, with a negative goal differential, might I add. So the Devils got to get things together here. And I know I've been all over the place, but lots of sports going on right now. And I think that's a really good thing. Tomorrow should be a really good day in the NFL. And if you're in the Northeast where the weather is just miserable, it was beautiful when it was snowing before, but if you're up here with the weather is absolutely miserable, enjoy the football, sit down, get yourself some nice snacks from Trader Joe's, and enjoy the games. Sauce Rant, live Philadelphia suburbs. We will see you later, everyone.